Good morning. Today is Thursday, December 2nd, and you're listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Taylor Chalstrom. On this episode, you'll hear another installment of Tech Thursday, a bi-weekly segment where we cover technological advances in ag. Our guest is Seth Hansen, PCA and CCA, and we'll be discussing setting business goals to guide ag tech initiatives. After that, we'll review today's news, and we'll finish off the show with information on climate-smart ag practices in almond orchards. Tech Thursday will be up right after this.
Being a member of the California walnut industry means working together to advance the industry through advocacy, research programs, and promoting walnuts with smart, cost-effective marketing, activities that are often too big for one operation to tackle on its own. There are unique ways the California Walnut Board and Commission deliver value. For example, health research gives consumers more reasons to believe in walnuts, while new and improved walnut varieties and production methods increase profitability, and it ensures the issues facing our industry are in the front of government decision makers. Learn more at walnuts.org.
AgTech is arguably the future of agriculture in California and across the world, but adoption of new technologies is daunting to many. Growers often experience barriers to AgTech when starting to explore. PCA and CCA Seth Hansen explained more about this ag tech divide.
Some of the technologies, some of the tools, even the software, it's a new process to introduce to the farmer, to the farming operation, and a new process maybe even for how the operation works through some issues or makes decisions or implements some new practices. So just the unfamiliarity with the technology, with the tools can be a difficulty in making a transition or adopting that technology.
Hansen said it's difficult to classify growers based on their adoption of technologies, as there are many baseline technologies that exist, and growers sometimes don't even realize that what they're employing on their operation falls under ag tech.
Pretty common things that many growers are already using in terms of technology might be drip irrigation. That is a newer type of technology when it comes to irrigation. And certainly many growers are using software, primarily email, weather apps, and perhaps accounting software as well. Then there's a whole nother level of technology where they start interacting with it some, but maybe they're not the primary consumer or user of that technology. So these are the things that we typically think of when we're talking ag tech, and that is more involved farm software platforms, of course, any kind of imagery, could also be controls and monitoring of irrigation systems. Those are the areas where we typically think of in terms of ag tech. And I would say among the growers I encounter, it would probably be somewhere between 10 and 20% who have started to use or become very comfortable with those technologies.
Hansen strongly believes that growers should set a series of goals before investing in ag tech. The question at hand, though, is what they need to assess.
I think that a grower, and all growers understand that there are costs, you know, there are investments of time and resources into any kind of new equipment, software, technology in general, and there's only so much you can do. So don't try and boil the ocean. I would say start by focusing on, that's the concept of, if you become convinced you need to make improvements, that should be based on challenges, issues you've identified in your operation that must be addressed. So perhaps it is a staffing issue and your staff just does not have time to keep track of all of the binders, the record keeping that's required for perhaps nitrogen management or pesticide reporting, whatever it may be. You might identify that as a tremendous issue and you need to equip that team or that person with some tools to do that much more efficiently so that they can focus on things that you value more highly than perhaps the record keeping. Perhaps it's an issue of poor performance in the field with spraying operations, and you are having a hard time identifying why it's taking either so long to spray certain fields, or perhaps why fields are sprayed, but you see those products that should work not performing as they ought to. So maybe you need to really dial in your spray program and put some tracking devices on your equipment to see how fast are we going? What's the completion time per acre? How much time is spent driving back to a shop to fill and mix up a new tank before driving back? And then continue to make further improvements based on that information. So you've really got to prioritize where you spend your time, your energy, and money to make it count the most. And sometimes it's going to be a really big project. Sometimes you might want to start small and kind of build some momentum with the technology.
Speaking of small, it is recommended typically that growers start small enough to get a running start with ag tech, but not too big to the point where they are overwhelmed. Hansen says that organizing an operation's finances is a good way to go about this.
Those that are really trying to prepare their farms, their operations for the future, they become convinced that they not only need to have the farming knowledge of the soils, the crops, the pests, nutrition, etc., but they need to manage their business, manage their finances effectively. And what happens very often, and it's just, you know, because of somewhat out of habit or practice, is that the finances are not tracked super closely. So instead of tracking every activity more real time as it's happening in the field, whether it is a crew that's moving through the field and tying trees or pruning, whether it is irrigations, the number of irrigations and the run times, those activities aren't tracked, especially tracked with an exact or estimated cost at the time. So what happens is periodically, hopefully at least monthly, maybe quarterly, or at the end of the season, there's a stack of invoices and delivery tickets. And you start sorting through everything, trying to split up costs. And you can only be so accurate when you're weeks or months after the fact. So I would say a great starting place would be to get a handle on your finances. Not only track things that are happening in your field, but start tracking your costs along the way. And sometimes software can be a great way to help with that.
Conversing with PCAs or CCAs about the ag tech that growers employ on their operations can often help them keep their ducks in a row.
There's a lot of interaction between the PCA and the grower. I'm an independent. Many PCAs are also doing sales. So there is a lot of communication that happens back and forth just in terms of input costs. And so what I've observed is that growers are usually pretty good at trying to remember those costs, but especially in these times, costs are changing quickly. And that means that management decisions might change based on those cost changes. So being able to keep track of all those changes throughout a season, when supply chain is tough and products are needing to be switched, gets all the more complicated. And having a place to document that and keep track of it in your field's, you know, ongoing budget is extremely valuable.
Costs changing quickly correlates with market changes on a domestic and global front. Countries around the world are constantly investing in development of ag tech, and it may be important for growers to be thinking about increasing global market pressures when considering investing in ag tech.
The reality is that we are one of many competitors in a global market, and that market is becoming increasingly competitive. And even for commodities like tree nuts, there are regions around the world where those commodities can be grown. Quality does appear to be improving. Production levels appear to be improving. And there are certainly opportunities for them to easily store and ship those commodities wherever they want to around the world. So It's just the fact that we are one of many competitors in the global market. And if we are seeing our competitors advance, we should be reminded that we have to stay on top of our game. And in some cases, that's going to be learning and adopting some of the latest technology to help us in that competitive market.
Hansen noted that growers are always finding creative ways to keep up with evolving practices and the ever-changing agricultural landscape, and evaluating specific needs for an operation when doing so will always be the best bet.
It's really important for operations owners to evaluate their specific needs and really identify those 2, 3, 4 major hurdles that they can see coming in the future that they've got to find a solution for, and see if there's an ag tech fit to help them achieve that goal.
When growers see that fit, they're going to want to start investing. Once investments are made and practices are implemented, measuring the success of those ag tech investments is important for future use of a product or system.
If we look at a simpler implementation, perhaps some farm data management software, depending on the size of the operation, that cost per user, especially spread out on a per acre basis, is typically fairly low. And really, I think the most straightforward way to measure that is if software is provided to a staff member or a team, if they continue to use it, if they give you positive feedback and it's affordable, well, then you've hit a home run. If your team cannot seem to understand how to use a technology, why to use a technology, can give you credible feedback that it's actually making their work more difficult, then those are the types of considerations that you need to weigh. But when it comes to software, oftentimes the user's feedback and getting really clear, asking great questions about their experience, it can be really, really valuable. There's technology that is not hardware or software, biological products that, you know, maybe are designed to reduce stress in a crop. It's very common for us to encounter those types of quote unquote new technologies. Those claims that are made are very hard to measure. And it requires years of monitoring the vigor, monitoring the yield in fields. So there are types of technologies that are much harder to evaluate, for sure.
Some newer quote-unquote technologies that fall under the biologicals category are still misunderstood or understudied in the ag industry and can be difficult to measure success of as a result. Hansen said knowing goals for your operation is the most important way to properly measure success of these types of products.
You need to really understand your goals and priorities and figure out if there are just one or two things that you can find in that technology that it appears to be really able to help you with, and say, okay, I can make a decision. If it can do this one thing for me and do it well, then I know that makes it worth my while. Mm-hmm. So don't try and just buy it based on all of the benefits they may market to you. Try and find one or two things that are the key benefits and use those as your metrics on how successful the implementation is and your return on investment.
That wraps up this week's Tech Thursday segment. We'll be right back with today's news after this.
Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com.
We're back with today's news. Above average temperatures are the norm for early to mid-December for the country. U.S. Department of Agriculture meteorologist Brad Rippey has more.
There's no end in sight of the mild weather that is affecting much of the country. In fact, above normal temperatures will dominate the nation, the greatest likelihood of warm conditions extending from California through the central and southern Great Plains. Meanwhile, we do expect to see a bit of an increase in precipitation in parts of the country. The Northwest will remain wet, but we'll also see some of that wetness extending further east across the northern tier of the country, then southward into parts of the Ohio Valley and the interior southeast. At the same time, drier than normal conditions expected from December 7th through the 13th from Southern California to the Central and Southern Great Plains, very consistent with a La Nina type signal in the atmosphere.
La Nina patterns are delaying rains in the Southwest, USDA's Stephanie Ho reports.
Wildfires are a continuing threat in some parts of the country.
In a normal year, you would have already experienced at least your first significant wetting rainfall, something that would tamp down the wildfire threat across Southern California. But given that La Nina is ruling the roost right now, we have not yet seen much of any rain moving into the southwestern quadrant of the country in recent weeks.
That was USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
So we have a delayed onset of the rainy season, and that has led to the wildfire threat continuing not just through November, but now into December across Southern California. And that is complicated by the fact that we have a multi-year drought in place across the region.
Dry conditions also help create more fuel.
We have not only the fine cured fuels, the normal seasonal drying of grasses, but we have some of those heavier fuels, dead or dying trees, for example, that can contribute to hotter, bigger, longer lasting wildfires.
In other news, California Department of Food and Agriculture's Office of Environmental Farming and Innovation is accepting public comments on its draft request for grant applications, or RGAs, for the Alternative Manure Management Program and Dairy Digester Research and Development Program. These programs provide financial assistance for the installation of dairy digesters and non-digester manure management practices on dairy and livestock operations in California, which will result in reduced greenhouse gas emissions. CDFA was allocated $32 million for livestock methane reduction in the Budget Act of 2021. Public comments on the draft RGAs for AMMP and DDRDP will be accepted through December 21, 2021 by 5 p.m. Comments regarding the draft guidelines must be submitted to the specific email address noted on each draft document. The draft RGAs establish parameters by which competitive grant applications for the AMMP and DDRDP must be submitted and evaluated. A stakeholder workshop is scheduled to update the public on the programs and to receive comments and suggestions for the draft guidelines. This workshop will be held as a webinar on Wednesday, December 8, 2021. That was today's regional and national news. We'll be right back after this break, and you'll hear from Almond Board of California's Gabrielle Lubwig on climate smart ag practices for almond orchards.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236. Or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Almond Board of California's Director of Sustainability and Environmental Affairs, Gabrielle Lubwig, discussed how she and the Almond Board define climate smart ag practices, noting that there's a lot of chatter surrounding this subject.
Basically, any way in your farm that you can work on reducing greenhouse gas emissions, which could be CO2, it could be methane, it could be nitrous oxide, and that reduction could be either you're avoiding, you're doing something so you don't have emissions, or you're sequestering it. So basically that could be anything from something on the soil health side to the kind of energy you use. All of those things fall under climate smart agriculture.
There are a number of practices that fall under the umbrella definition of climate smart agriculture.
One is just realizing we're growing a woody biomass called the tree. And the tree alone is storing carbon. And that, if it's there in the orchard for 25 years, that carbon storage actually helps reduce the rate of climate change. So just realize that that's sort of the first thing. The next thing is basically, can we store carbon in soils? And that's something I think that's really unique for agriculture, is that we have practices that can actually store carbon right now without any fancy technology. And that's where there's a lot of excitement, is around soil health practices. So that's things like whole orchard recycling. If you take that woody biomass that's storing carbon and you store it even longer by grinding it up and putting in the soil and having a gradual breakdown. Adding cover crops, which add biomass, or compost, could be biochar maybe, or digestates from some methane digesters. All of those things can increase the organic matter content of your soil and store more carbon in the soil. I mean, there's turnover, but it's fundamentally more storage over time.
Another area related to the soil is around nitrogen.
We did a life cycle assessment for almonds, and as I have to admit, expected, the largest contributor to greenhouse gases is nitrogen. And that's mainly the energy hidden in producing the nitrogen, but also a small amount of that nitrogen gets turned into something called nitrous oxide, and that's a very potent greenhouse gas. And so we've done research about how do we minimize N2O emissions. And there's a couple of things you can do. You can choose forms of nitrogen like CAN17. They have less emissions associated with it. Anything that improves nitrogen use efficiency helps reduce the N2O emissions. So again, I think there's some things there in that space that growers have opportunities to reduce their overall, to have a climate smart agriculture practice is around nitrogen. And the other spaces, and especially for woody biomass, is like bioenergy byproducts usage. So things that, you know, traditionally we've sent our woody biomass to cogens, and that means we didn't have to burn fossil fuels in some way to get that electricity. Nowadays, we have second generation biomass facilities like pyrolysis that can provide electricity. But the other thing to think about is, just the fact that our almond hulls go to dairy feed, that means there's something we don't have to grow instead of. Again, that offsets some of those things. So we're also doing research trying to find additional beneficial uses for our hulls, our shells, and our woody biomass that not only bring more return to growers, but also help reduce in some way the greenhouse gas emissions associated with it.
Another area of climate smart ag surrounds energy and energy efficiency.
The biggest driver for climate change is our use of fossil fuel. So any place that you can, you know, have solar facilities to help you, you know, pump your pumps. Put energy in your pumps. Because again, that life cycle assessment, the thing that surprised me was how much energy is hidden in water for pumping, for pressurizing, for moving it around the state. So anything you can do, you know, to buy the electric vehicles, those kinds of things also are part of climate smart agriculture.
Of course, the grower needs to be incentivized to implement climate smart ag practices in their orchards, according to Ludwig, or else it's not economic.
The driver is that it has some other benefit to the grower. So if we look at some of the soil health practices, certainly like with whole orchard recycling, we have unique data that shows, at least in the first field trial, that in the first 5 years of production, you had a cumulative 19% yield increase. Now that is an incentive to do a practice because you actually see a direct benefit to the bottom line, okay? If you can improve your nitrogen use efficiency, again, those are things that help your bottom line. So I think really thinking about these practices less in the, from a grower's perspective, is less about can I reduce the greenhouse gases, as does it help me in some way with being a better farmer, being able to grow my crop better, reduce some kind of input costs. And if you look at most of these practices, not all of them, but most of them, they have an element of that.
As far as climate smart ag practices go, there are a multitude of incentive programs available to growers.
You have, you know, USDA NRCS has incentive funding, and you have the Healthy Soils Initiative through CDFA. Those are all incentive funding to help growers, especially because the story I tell with the whole orchard recycling was the first 3 years, we didn't really see that much difference between the burn plots and the whole orchard recycling. So it took 3 years before things had broken down enough to actually make a difference. Well, you know, how do you overcome some of the time lag it takes for the soil to change enough to actually see the benefit, but you have these inputs? You know, similarly, if you are to invest in a variable rate pump that reduces some of your energy usage for irrigation, there's an upfront investment with an amortization over time. So how do you help incentivize some of those transitions? Because again, there's upfront costs, and even though they may benefit the grower, the benefit doesn't always show up quite right away with the cost.
To get an idea about how orchard practices align with modern sustainability recommendations and climate smart ag practices, the Almond Board of California has the California Almond Sustainability Program, or CASP.
What CASP does is it basically asks growers questions: are you doing this practice, yes or no, XYZ practice? It's around irrigation, nutrient management, even financial questions, and, how you manage your finances. Because it's really saying sustainability is the whole package, not just climate smart ag. That's a subset of it. Mm-hmm. So what CASP allows us to do, if growers are willing to take the time, and it does take time to write down what are you doing or not doing, and then share that data anonymously with us at the Almond Board or your handler, it allows us to track changes over time. So we can look at, for example, we can say like whole orchard recycling wasn't even on the radar screen 5 years ago. And now something like 50% of the orchards that do get replanted, they're using whole orchard recycling. That's something we can say because growers have taken the time to share their data via the CASP program. So that's where it becomes useful, but in and of itself, it's not climate smart ag per se. It's a way of helping seeing changes over time. It's a way for growers to take a step back and look at it, their whole operation, and say, hey, what am I doing? What am I not doing? You can get feedback how you compare to other growers. So it's really more of a chance to reflect on your operation than anything, than climate smart ag per se.
Ludwig noted a couple of important changes to CASP since its inception.
The big change is when we started CASP, and literally the first self-assessments were done for irrigation and nutrient modules in the fall of 2009. So this is more than 10 years ago. At that time, we kind of knew that we might need some data for reputation management. We kind of knew that the companies were lurking out there and might want data, but we really didn't know what they wanted and what it was going to be. Then the last drought hit, and I'll tell you that data was incredibly invaluable because we could say, hey, this is how many growers who are using micro-irrigation systems, or this, how many growers who are using crop coefficients to determine when and how much to irrigate, something almost no other crop had. But the big change I would say right now, what's really happening is the buyers are asking a lot more questions about how almonds are grown. And so the handlers are getting asked, can you tell me if your growers are doing this and this? Are you using these practices? Are you not using these practices? And that's really been the big change in my mind in the last just the 3 years. And I just in the last week or two, we've gotten all kinds of questions from buyers, or handlers trying to deal with buyers asking questions. So to me, that's the big change that's happened. The fundamentals of the program haven't actually changed. The kinds of questions we ask, we've been trying to hone them because they have so many, because initially we started as a very educational program, but they became long because of that. So we're now trying to winnow out questions that may not be that necessary. And then I think the other thing that has changed is you say, look, certainly when we did nutrient module, which is one of the first ones, we didn't even know that we'd be doing whole orchard recycling. So there's some practices that we've had to add in and how to add in something that's you do just once at planting and not every year. So there's definitely been changes to the questions, but the fundamentals really have not changed.
Further on the topic of Climate Smart Ag and affiliated programs, Almond Board of California is also starting a pilot project soon with Ecosystem Services Market Consortium, a nonprofit that is developing carbon markets to link companies and growers. Ludwig said the overarching goal of this pilot program is to provide another revenue stream for growers.
Essentially saying, if you are making the effort to do something, the fancy term for it is ecosystem services. So if you're doing something that helps the public as a whole, whether it's reducing greenhouse gases in some way, whether providing habitat for biodiversity, whether maintaining water quality or water amount, then is there some way to actually have growers benefit from those efforts in addition to growing their crops? And one of the ways that that's happening is through these private markets, private ecosystem services markets. And I'll be upfront. Most of this conversation has been with Midwestern crops. And so when I learned about the acronym for is ESMC, which is easier than to remember, Ecosystem Services Market Consortium. When I found out that ESMC was working on this and they're a nonprofit, I'd worked with or I'd seen the woman in charge of it work on these issues for a long time. And just know that her focus is on getting a return back to growers, because the more middle people you have, less of it gets back to growers. Sure. You know, I reached out and said, hey, could we work together? Because we also have a lot of data. We have data on N2O emissions. We have data on carbon. We have this whole orchard recycling. So we're the first specialty crops to be part of their pilot projects. They've done pilots in the Midwest already for the last year or two, but we're the first specialty crop. And so the goal is really to test in this pilot, test, okay, what are the practices and how do we keep track of them? How do we keep track of the changes they're making in a way that will work for buyers? And ESMC has also said, you don't just do a practice or a protocol, you have buyers in place so you know what they're looking for. And so really what this pilot is about is, can we work on developing these protocols that are work for almond growers and for buyers? And then, you know, how does that work to have the relationship? How does it work to monitor? How does it work to set up contracts? I mean, that's, they say, we're not going to be the first pilot because they've been doing this with other crops like corn and soybeans, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But we're the first time to do it for specialty crops. And I'll tell you, thinking more than an annual crop is a different way of thinking for them.
Yeah.
So, so we're looking for growers who'd be interested in trying this out. And if you're interested, get in touch with me.
That about wraps up our show today. Thank you for listening. This is Taylor Chalstrom reporting for My Ag Life.
Salty, closed soils can render your crops unproductive. Desal, formulated by AgroPlanté, is specially designed for sodic and saline sodic soils. Desal will displace sodium and wash it out of the root zone with irrigation to enhance your soil structure, water penetration, and vitality by decreasing soil salinity. AgroPlanté's Desal flocculates your soil to promote soil aeration and drainage. With Desal, you'll create a better soil environment for your crop roots and optimize yield. Contact AgroPlanté today to find out more at 559-498-0388 or visit us at agroplanté.com.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.